Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Cold River Mountain Watch. Cold River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Cold River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. I was a little overmodulated for the beginning, but I'm hoping. Is it really? Really, guys? Oh, for pity's sake. Use the voice. Same, still the Cylon-y kind of misery. Okay. All right. Well, we'll get the program started, I hope, and this will not go on too long. But it looks like the restart that I did over the computer and the equipment prior to the beginning of the show, just prior to the beginning of the show, is not sufficient to the task. Guess what? Got another restart coming. Yeah, this thing's just crapping out all over the place. Okay, well, hi everybody. It's the 26th of April 2013, and we're going to begin this program by restarting the whole thing, so I'll be back in a minute, y'all.
Yeah, okay, so we're going to try this one more time. And I think we're streaming. I'm checking in the chat room. Oh, hi, this is the horn. You can find us at headonradionetwork.com when you can find us. When the hardware is cooperating, which it seems, I don't know, I think I put my one arm in the air and stuck my tongue out this night, and this time it worked. How long it will continue to work, I do not know. Hallelujah. Thank you, Jug of Punch. Thanks, Jeff and Sue. Thanks, Sparky. Seems to be working. Once more into the breach, dear friends. Well, see, Will, it's interesting you would haul out a little bit of Shakespeare, because that's where I was going to start this evening. But before we get there, just a couple of announcements to start the program. To wit, this is all listener-supported. You know that. And we are behind for the month of April. Rather sorely behind, I'm afraid, as a result of the fact that, well, between meetings and technical screw-ups and things like that, I haven't been on the air but one night this week. So, you know, there's that. But nonetheless, it is listener-supported. And, of course, the PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. And the traditional carbon-intensive mail address is Head On Communications, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318. Beckley, BECKLEYWV, 25801. And remember, if you're using the mail method, checks and money orders should not be made payable to Bob Kincaid, as Bob Kincaid does not see the money. I can guarantee you that. It goes for bill paying and such. Boss Man Wayne deals with all of those issues. Thank you, Agnes Dear. She says, sounds great. Sandra, I hope it's audible now. It is the end of the week. It is the end of a long and tiresome week of meetings and briefings. And, well, the other night I played for you some of the audio from Tuesday afternoon's AIC Act briefing over in the Cannon House office building. You can see all of it and hear all of it if you go to AICACT.org and give a listen and give a viewing there. It's in the all the videos are in a single blog post. So avail yourself of it, pass it around, share it with folks. I think it was pretty moving and pretty dynamic. But like I said, I had it in my head to start the program this evening, as Will kind of inadvertently predicted, with some Shakespeare, or a cautionary tale about the use of Shakespeare. It would be, well, it's Michele Bachmann. There are some things that should just be left alone. Firearms lying out. You know, just don't touch them. Get away from them. One should not walk into a chemistry lab and simply start mixing stuff. Bad things can happen. One should not even do that with household chemicals. It's just not a good idea. You know, mixing up a little ammonia and bleach to go and take care of the bathtub, you know? It'll take care of you. There are things that only... Oh, well, what am I getting at? And by the way, just by way of follow-up, I left the air early a couple of nights ago. there was nothing funny about it. Ferg fell and just sprained. He rolled his ankle. And anybody who's ever known that, done that, knows how intensely painful that can be. But he rolled his ankle, and we kind of had to attend to it because he was, Dad, I've broken my ankle. No, son, you've only sprained it. But that's why I had to leave the show early a couple of nights ago, Wednesday evening. Meanwhile, no, back to the topic at hand. Michele Bachmann decided, and remember, this woman went to where for school? The Oral Roberts University, where the healing hands of education were laid on her, and I guess she was educated by faith and not by works or who knows what. But I can assure you that the sequestration is having its intended, not unintended, its intended effect here. Where before, for instance, if we were going to a meeting on the House side of the Hill, we could leave here walking 20 minutes before meeting time and be there outside the office 5 minutes before the meeting started. You can't do that now because you don't know if it's going to be a line around the block or just a walk right through kind of situation trying to get through security into the House office buildings because so many of the entrances have been closed as a result of the so-called sequestration. Frustrating to say the least. Meanwhile, the Congress, in an act of, what, self-interest? Because the Congress suddenly realized that they were going to be inconvenienced by the sequester's effect on airline travel, and that they might be sitting around with the hoi polloi waiting for the next flight out to Busted Knuckle. Well, they stepped in and carved out an exception today to protect their hides as they flew on through the nation's skyways and byways and whatnot. But of course, they haven't quite gotten around to doing the business of the people with issues that don't necessarily gore their ox, as the case may be. Let's see here. Speaking of oxen getting gored. And no, that's not Al Gore. The Congress has not acted or done a damn thing in any way to relieve the agonies brought about by cuts to long-term unemployment benefits. Head Start. Yeah, this and the Head Start story, sequestration story, is particularly sickening. If you can imagine this, and you know, there's a lot of people out there that go out on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Fridays, and Saturdays. They go out and they buy themselves their various and sundry lottery tickets, their Mega Millions and their Powerballs and so forth. And they do this, my personal theory, they do this because while the odds are incredibly long against any good ever coming of it, beyond maybe once in a while winning a dollar or two, they at least have a presumably legitimate chance. Even if it's 1 in 42 million, it is a chance of something good happening. The same cannot be said of this country's approach to what little frayed remnant remains of its middle class, and God knows not of its low. Oh, didn't I ask a while back? Please stop me if I say middle or lower class. No, it's working class. Yeah, the deck is stacked, the dice are loaded, there's a break on the roulette wheel against the working class in this country. And so when people play the lottery, they're playing something that they hope is at least a straight game. Because the ones they're playing every day with banks and credit card companies and insurers and healthcare providers, and those games are loaded. Oh, yeah, Head Start. Head Start had to be gashed, slashed, hacked, chopped, cut by 5% as a result of the so-called sequester. Right? This has resulted in children being put into lotteries. And understand, Head Start is a program that applies in the first place to low-income children. We're fast approaching one of those Jonathan Swift kind of moments. You remember A Modest Proposal, in which he proposed that upper-class English people simply begin eating Irish children? It was one of the most profound and biting pieces of satire ever penned in the English language, and it was absolutely shocking when it came out in England. Well, we're getting, and this is not satire, we're getting very close to something that is disturbingly similar. There are literally lotteries now to find out which low-income working-class children get to learn and get a head start on the educational process, and which ones do not. In particular, it's happening in Talibandiana. The Indiana Journal-Gazette reporting that at least two Indiana Head Start programs have resorted to a random drawing to determine which 36 preschool students will be removed from the education program for low-income families. God damn, it's the Hunger Games! Your Congress at work. Well, not your Congress, not my Congress. The repig-licking thugs in Congress, who somehow can manage to sit down and agree with their Democratic counterparts in regard to things that would take, protect, solve problems related to said Congress people flying around the country, but haven't seemed to figure out how to fix anything, this repig-licking majority, with regard to three dozen preschoolers in Talibandiana. The Head Start programs in Columbus and Franklin, Talibandiana, are losing 2 classrooms. That means 36 children won't be able to return, weren't able to return, after the middle of March. That's how old the story is. Yeah. Imagine that. Now, this is not a lottery to find out who gets to go in. This is a lottery to find out who gets kicked out. Is this the literary portion of the program where I recommend, because you can find it online, everybody go and read Shirley Jackson's incredibly disturbing short story called, oddly enough, The Lottery? Thirty-six children. And generally speaking, children who get to go to Head Start love going to Head Start. Because Head Start teachers, by and large, treat the children, in some instances, better than they're treated at home, and certainly better than they are treated at large in their communities. Because remember, these are working class children on the far low end of the economic spectrum. No Head Start. No, how do you explain? And in fact, what kind of explanation is it when you tell a child on, say, Sunday evening, who says, "Mommy, I've got my stuff ready for tomorrow. And Mommy says, "What do you mean tomorrow?" "So I can go back and see Miss Donna at the Head Start." "Oh, baby, I'm sorry. You can't go back to Head Start anymore." "Why, Mommy?" That conversation happened 36 times in Talibandiana. Back on March 18th, Tennessee eliminated bus service. All bus transportation in Head Start. All. The Tennessee letter said, "Every effort will be made to reinstate transportation services starting in August." The director of program services in Washington State said, "We'll lose money for the child care food program, and there may be dollars lost from our partnership with the Spokane School District for serving kids with disabilities." It's Pennsylvania. It's Florida. And of all the things that can happen to little people early in their lives, study after study after study after study after study has shown that Head Start really is a head start. All told, because of the Repig-Lickin' Party, and yes, I suppose a few Democratic Party enablers, 70,000 American children, are going to lose out. 70,000 American children are being bounced out of Head Start and early Head Start programs. I read this story and I thought about my dear friend and my colleague, Dr. Bill O'Brien. I don't think a minute of a day passes when he's not thinking about what we are and aren't doing right in terms of educating the citizenry in this country. I know a number of you were moved when he shared with us that that Thomas Jefferson theory for the general education of people, and he talked about how they would rake the rubbish. You know, that's you and me, the rubbish Thomas Jefferson would consider us. We don't have a plantation. We don't have 40 acres. Right. Well, as shocking as that phrase was, what we see here is that even that is going to be given up on. And while I would not dare to speak for Dr. Bill, when you give up on the youngest of the young, the youngest of the teachable young, you've given up on your future. You've given up on the country. Well, of course, the non-working class, the 1%, they'll be, I don't know, they'll hire a nanny or an au pair to teach their children. And see, homeschooling is not a possibility for these 70,000 children, because mommy and daddy often are not at home. They're not the shiftless layabouts that the right wing and the Repig-Lickin' Party like to portray. They're working one, two, three jobs. Gee, you know, I wonder if down at the George W. Bush Memorial Library and Comic Book Museum, I wonder if they've got a display on the woman whom he told, the woman who he described as uniquely American, who told him that she was working three jobs. As uniquely American. Well, you know what? How do you homeschool your kids when you're working three jobs? Well, they don't need to really learn that much anyway. The world needs ditch diggers too. Right? Sandra with a tweet. She says, WIC will lose $177 million in funding. The program serves 9 million women and children. Jesus Christ. What kind of country are you going to wind up with when you're just going to give up on the working class children from the lower economic rungs of the ladder? By the way, those low-income families, or let's take the word families away, those low incomes, as the right-wingers like to refer to, that's what they do. They refer to poor folks as low incomes and women as vaginas. There's 140,000 low-income families. Most of them are either senior citizens, elderly, or they are families with, children. You know, the children that the right wing is so insistent be born. Well, the little fetuses are precious to us. God bless them. Well, at least until they're done, and then, you know, F them, they're on their own. Yeah, rental assistance is disappearing. Student loan fees going up. Goodbye, Meals on Wheels. Hundreds of thousands of dollars of cuts. FEMA? Well, sequestration's going to take the starch out of FEMA just in time for derecho season to begin again in Appalachia. Oh, and OSHA, which has not been well-funded anyway, OSHA, which might have possibly maybe been able to prevent that godforsaken disaster in West Texas, had they been properly funded in the first place, yeah, they're going to get less. This goes on and on and on. And the vandals of the Republican Party. Hey, hand me another one of them big old fat funky cigars and $100 bill to light it with. Yeah, but back if we may to Michelle Bachmann. She's precious, you know. She's special. Yeah, special. What do I mean? Well, she's a little tired of people like me and you complaining about what the sequestration is doing. And what's more, she's a little bit concerned. No, she's a lot concerned. I mean, to the extent that somebody with the mental acuity of a banana slug can be concerned. She's right disturbed about the fact that it looks like people are kind of blaming her and her fiscally conservative party for what's going on. Come on, Michelle.
Hey, Mary. What you doing?
Damn commercials. I'll be glad when we get pay internet. Oh, it'll go away in a minute. But the fun thing is, these are remarks from the, no kidding, floor of the House of Representatives. This is not something that she hollered out to her mouth-breathing followers, you know, some story about a U-2 boat or some such as that. No, no. Oh, hell no. No, this is on the floor of the House.
I thank Mr. Latham for offering this bill. It's high time that the FAA, Mr. Speaker, have the flexibility they need to have on closures of any air traffic control towers. It is my hope that St. Cloud, Minnesota, and Anoka Blaine airports do remain open. They're vital. They're much needed. We're looking at approximately 189 airports. But I want to speak to something else. We were listening to Representative Hoyer and Representative Pelosi be extremely passionate about the loss that we'll see for children through Head Start, for senior citizens through Meals on Wheels,
for children who will be dealing
with various other food nutrition programs.
Screw
that breaks everyone's hearts. But I want to remind the people of this country. It was Speaker Pelosi, former Speaker Pelosi, Representative Hoyer, Senator Reid, and President Obama who signed the sequestration bill. And it was Press Secretary Jay Carney who admitted that the sequestration was President Obama's idea. There are numerous Republicans that voted against the sequestration because we knew all of these calamities were in the future. And so it reminds me of the Shakespeare line, "Thou protestest too much." Didn't you know this was going to happen?
You know Shakespeare vomited in his own grave just now, right? He does it every time somebody plays this clip. those of us, Republicans who, when at the same time the sequestration was a, what was it? Wasn't that a result of Republicans hollering about the deficit? Wasn't this a sword of Damocles to be hung over the collective Congress's head so that, because there's no way they would let this kind of stuff happen? But they did. They did. Michelle Bachmann did. John Boehner did. Eric Leave Britney Alone Cantor did. The Vandals and the Visigoths, and the poop flingers of the Republican monkey house did let this happen. And how does she butcher Shakespeare? Wait a minute, what?
And it was Press Secretary Jay Carney who admitted that the sequestration was President Obama's idea. There are numerous Republicans that voted against the sequestration.
They may have voted against it, but she can't pronounce it.
Because we knew all of these calamities were in the future. And so it reminds me of the Shakespeare line, "Thou protestest too much."
Yeah. The Shakespeare line. Just the way they taught her down there at dear old ORU. Thou protestest. Man, that is pro-level usage of Elizabethan English, isn't it? Methinks thou protestest too much. Yeah, I don't mean to sound all highfalutin or anything, but can we have a little academic moment? Who knows? Maybe Michelle's listening. Hi, Missy. You know this comes from Hamlet, right? In point of fact, you know that within Hamlet there's this play within a play. I know there's tons of folks in the Horn family, probably most folks, who know their Shakespeare as well or better than I do. And it's all about the play within the play whereby Hamlet will catch the conscience of the king. Because, see, the ghost of his daddy done showed him how the guy who became king, King Claudius, waited for old King Hamlet to fall asleep there in the garden, and then poured poison in his ears. Just like talk radio, right-wing talk radio, does today. Yeah, maybe we should change Glenn Beck or Alex Jones' name to Claudius. It's Act 3, Scene 2. As they're watching the play within the play, Hamlet goes and asks his mommy, "Mama, mother," what she thinks about the queen in the play's promise never to marry again should her husband the king die. And Queen Gertrude says that the lady protests too much, methinks. Because, of course, it was meant to reflect upon Gertrude's having remarried hastily after the death of the king, Hamlet. And she's saying that, you know, things can happen. The queen here is making promises maybe she can't keep. But never mind, really. Because that's not what they told her down there in the hallowed old halls of O.R. Pugh. What was that again? I don't think I could do that drunk.
And it was Press Secretary Jay Carney who admitted that the sequestration was President Obama's idea. There are numerous Republicans that voted against the sequestration because we knew all of these calamities were in the future. And so it reminds me.
Calamities. When clams attack.
We have the Shakespeare line, thou protestest too much. Didn't you know this was going to happen? We knew it. That's why we voted against this bill.
Yeah, and that's why you let it go ahead. You know, you had months, and you let it happen anyway. Methinks they doth protestest too much. And yet the funny thing is, this weirdo comes from a religious sect that generally holds that the King James Version of the Bible is the accepted and inspired version, Word of God and stuff. Protestist? It sounds like something you'd find in a Bugs Bunny cartoon or Three Stooges, where everybody understood that there was a gag involved. Yes, Angry Indian, she is serious. She ain't kidding. Methinks they doth protestest too much. I feel like my tongue's going to rattle out of my mouth when I... You can't even say that. The lady protests too much, methinks. Protestest. Right. Kate writes in from the Front Range, talking about the Head Start story. She says, this story breaks my heart. In the 70s, these were the most rewarding times for me. As an assistant in the classroom, I taught a little guy to not be afraid to step off the pavement. He had never walked on green grass. Another little boy didn't know how to eat a sandwich. Another 5-year-old wouldn't leave my long hair alone. It took me several days to realize he'd never touched Caucasian hair. Most memorable was the boy who wouldn't drink his milk at lunch, because he wanted to take the carton home to his mommy. My heart, says Kate, aches for the parents and kids who are getting left behind. Bless us all. That's about all we got going for us. But see, that's still happening today, and it's happening in even more dramatic fashion. I think I've mentioned in the past, and maybe Betsy's mentioned it too. I know I've heard about it in conferences I've been in here in Appalachia, or there in Appalachia, about programs that on Fridays send little backpacks home with the little folks. Filled with non-perishable and yet hopefully nutritious food. Because there are children who simply do not eat when school is not in session. But you know what? I checked up and down K Street since I'm here in D.C. And I can't find any highfalutin K Street lobby offices looking out for little folks who don't get fed on the weekends. That's generally the work of the angels, and it's generally done by foundations and nonprofits that operate on shoestrings and have to account for every penny that they spend on the annual paperclip budget. And it's especially, I think I would be frustrated enough by this were I back in the hills and hollers of almost level West by God, Virginia. But where I am right now, I am furious. Trying to behave myself a little bit here. Don't like for the neighbors to hear me a-screaming. But I'm furious. When you walk around this town and you see what we do have a budget for, even though we obviously don't have a budget for maintaining all of the public entrances to public buildings. But when you see what we do have a budget for, I happened to walk by the Capitol Police truck van, whatever thing, probably cost $1 million, their hazmat response vehicle. I reckon we need one, you know, because of the evildoers. And we don't seem to have any problem putting automatic weapons, and I'm sure they are full auto, these AR-15s or these blacked out, black-barreled, synthetic-stocked firearms that the Capitol Police have. Budget seems to be intact for that. Budget seems to be intact for Andrews Air Force Base. But you don't have to go far into D.C. to find places where the budget's not working anymore. Supposedly, by the way, Congress restored funding for WIC's nutrition programs, women, infants, and children, in a spending resolution that passed right before the sequestration took effect. One wonders how long that is in effect. But when you see the list of stuff that's getting hacked, you realize that the sequestration was nothing more than a right-winger's wet dream. Jesus. All along, they said things like, I want to eliminate the U.S. Department of Education. And now, they get to. More or less. Head start. Under the subject line, a self-serving Congress and the FAA, Jim writes in, he says, how many cancer patients denied care, hungry kids and the elderly, not to mention other victims of the sequester, are complaining about delays on the tarmac? Yeah, but see, Jim, this was one of those fly-home days because the Congress isn't even in session next week. They're taking some much-needed off time. Because it's mighty hard work. Now, mind you, when that happens, the staff stays and works. Oh, hell yes. But, well, you get the idea. You see how it operates. But, Lord God, really? Lotteries? For four-year-olds? That is how they start their American experience? I'm sorry, baby. Your name came up among those. You don't get to go back. Yes, I'm sure your little friends will miss you, baby. And maybe you'll see them when you go to kindergarten or something. I know, baby. Mama can't, Daddy can't explain it either, except to say that there's some very nasty, nasty people in a place called Washington, D.C., who hate you, sugar. Michelle Bachman, she hates you, baby. Eric Cantor would not pee on you if you were on fire, honey lamb. John Boner needs your Head Start money for his wine. Because, see, you're just one of us little people, and you need to learn that early and quick. Because if you don't, you're going to spend your whole life with your heart broken. Because you see, sugar, the Republican Party and the so-called fiscal conservatives and the party of life would just as soon you, baby, were dead. How do you make that talk or some semblance of it? How do you make that talk to a 4-year-old who just wants to go and learn come Monday? I'm damned if I know. So there we find ourselves at the end of this first hour on this Friday on the front porch. Oh, there's a lot more to go into. A lot. The Skype line, I'll open up here shortly. But right now, I'm going to take a little break. And note the passing of the old possum, No Show Jones, George Jones, who sang a whole lot of heartbreak, who drank his weight in liquor and probably snorted his weight in coke. That's the nature of the beast sometimes. I remember him for the fact that, I guess maybe I was 10 or 12 years old, and he had moved down to where I was living in Alabama. Mom and Dad were looking for a new easy chair for Dad, and in the midst of browsing around, the salesperson on the floor, lovely, lovely lady, looked at my dad and said, "There's George Jones." And my dad, never one to miss an opportunity, matched her whisper and said, "Who's George Jones?" Because my father didn't know of any musicians past Nat King Cole. Frankie Plain. But it turned out that George would come over and get liquored up with one of his songwriting buddies. And they just happened to live right next door to us. There was some serious carrying on went on in that house. And I don't think that house has been right since. But he inspired a lot of people and spoke to a lot of heartache. And James Taylor even wrote a song for George to record. He respected him so much. So a little interlude from George Jones, and then we'll get going with the second hour of the program. This is listener-supported conversation radio. We try to raise about $150 a night. We are behind as we come up to the end of the month of April. It's been a brutal month. Sometimes they're like that. PayPal button or traditional carbon-intensive mail, either way is more than welcome, and we thank you. Little George Jones, this is the horn.
Now I'm just a bartender, and I don't like my work, but I don't mind the money at all. I see lots of sad faces and lots of bad cases of folks with their backs to the wall. But I need four walls around me my life, to keep me from going astray, and a honky-tonk angel to hold me tight, to keep me from slipping. I can light up your smokes, I can laugh at your jokes, I can watch you fall down on your knees. I can close down this bar, I can gas up my car, and I can pack up and mail in my keys. I need four walls around me to hold my life, to keep me from going astray, and a honky-tonk angel to hold me tight, to keep me from slipping. Now the smoke fills the air in this honky-tonk bar, and I'm thinking about where I'd rather be. But I've burned all my bridges, and I sank all my ships. Now I'm stranded at the edge of the sea. I still need four walls around me to hold me from going astray. I need some honky-tonk angels to hold me tight. They'll keep me from slipping away. He said, I'll love you till I die. She told him, you'll forget in time. As the years went slowly by, she still preyed upon his mind. He kept her picture on his wall. went half crazy now and then. But he still loved her through it all, hoping she'd come back again. Kept some letters by his bed. Did in 1962. He had underlined in red every single I love you. I went to see him just today. Oh, but I didn't see no tears. All dressed up to go away. First time I'd seen him smile in years. He stopped loving her today. They placed a wreath upon his door, and soon they'll carry him away. He stopped loving her today. You know, she came to see him one last time. Oh, and we all wondered if she were. And it kept running through my mind. This time, he's over her for good. He stopped loving her today. It placed a wreath upon his door. Soon they'll carry him away. He stopped loving her today.
Oh, well, some stuff works and some stuff doesn't, and apparently the intro doesn't work right now, so, oh, well, you'll have that. Welcome to the second hour of the program tonight, Friday on the Front Porch. This is The Horn. I'm Bob. You know that. I'm just glad that the magic is working well enough to let us get a stream out. We are still getting it. Oh, yes, we are. We're still getting a stream out. Let's get a little, yeah, that's a little better, isn't it? Right. The Skype line is open. Bob Kincaid Horn. We're not quite to the point where we can take phone calls yet. There's still a whole lot of computer misery going on back at the home studios. Hi, Agnes. Kate, next door on Shade? Yes, Kate, yes. If you're standing on the front porch and you look to the house to your right, yes, that's where George came and hung out. See, he had moved down to Alabama to evade some alimony and child support issues. Right, yeah. Kate says, I love that slide. Makes me want to put on tight pants and do something trashy. Kate says, I closed so many gin mills to this music. Yeah. The cackle in the background was Ferg. Agnes is monitoring at home and with regard to things like Meals on Wheels and food for seniors and little folks trying to go to Head Start. Agnes says only, "Welcome to the Hunger Games. May the odds be always in your favor." Yeah, I got a feeling we're going to have to go to the doctor with Ferg when we get home. I just saw his ankle, and there's a part of it that's really purple. Deeply disturbing. And he's walking on it, which he oughtn't. Jim with a question. Had Obama not signed the sequester action, do you think he would have been overturned? Seriously. Signed, Jim. And by overturned, Jim, I assume you mean either some sort of coup or some sort of impeachment proceeding. I think this was a case of the. Listen. I don't mean you specifically, Jim. Barack Obama approached this as a poison pill that no one would ever possibly take. But I guess what he failed to take into account, or was constitutionally, and I don't mean the document, I mean personally, unable to contemplate, is that this is, like I said earlier, I'm not trying to be graphic or gross, a right-wing wet dream. Because then they knew they could come back in and save the things that mattered to them. Piecemeal. This is almost, if you think about it, how many decades did the Republicans holler that what the president needed was a line item veto? Remember the line item veto? And then they finally got it, and it happened to be Bill Clinton who had it, and bang, up it went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said, oh, hell no, that's unconstitutional. I remember that. I remember Ronnie Reagan, well, what I need is a brain and a line item veto, mommy. But they still, right-wingers still talk about the line item veto because they dream of the day when they can get an ideologue in office and give that ideologue that power and do exactly what the sequester did. The Congress can come back and fix the things it deems to need fixing. You know, things that make their lives better and screw some miserable little four-year-old who wants to learn to read. Reading, schmeeding. They don't need reading. They need to learn how to handle a shovel. Right? We ain't going to be raking no rubbish. We're going to let the rubbish lay. This is what they wanted. This is the please, Brer Fox, kill me if you want to, but don't throw me in that old briar patch. And into the briar patch they went, giggling in flight. The sequester is a line item veto for a reactionary, radical, right-wing Congress. Seriously. I don't see any other way of describing it. But there is a ton more stuff to get after. Because it is Friday on the front porch, And because this kind of stuff, well, I don't want to wait till Wednesday or whatever. Well, consider the state of Arizona. You know, since we're talking about education and everything. And this story about a freak at the University of Arizona. This particular freak goes by the name of Brother Dean Samuel. Of course, it's not his real name. His name is Dean Saxton. And this past Tuesday, he got him a piece of poster board, a big old Sharpie marker. And on it, he printed the words, "You deserve rape." And stood and screamed his fool effing head off, I guess right there at the administration building of the University of Arizona. They've got their own little newspaper there at the University of Arizona. It's a big university. It's the Daily Wildcat. Brittany Mejia wrote the article. She wrote, "A student holding a sign that read, 'You deserve rape,' ignited outrage across campus Tuesday. On the same day, a sexual assault awareness event but administrators declined requests to remove him or his sign." Now, this freak, hiding behind the skirts of the First Amendment and its guarantee of a so-called freedom of religion, basically is a one-man Westboro Baptist for the UA campus. And his "You deserve rape" sign was a manifestation of that. Kind of embarrasses me. He's a junior studying the classics and religious studies. Oh, dear. Latin, Greek, and freak. He explained that his sermonizing was meant to impress upon people that if you dress like a whore, act like a whore, you're probably going to get raped. I think that girls that dress and act like it, they should realize that they do have partial responsibility, because I believe that they're pretty much asking for it. And you've got to... It's impossible not to speculate about what kind of sad, sick, syphilitic bats fly around inside Brother Dean Samuel's noggin. Belfry, what have you. Now, Kendall Washington White is the interim dean of students at the University of Arizona. He commented that we find it, talking about the sign and the message, "We find it to be vulgar and vile. However, it is protected speech. He has yet to, at this point, violate the student code of conduct." Well, Dean Weenie, the student code of conduct is not what controls at this point. It is the Constitution of the United States and the interpretation of the First Amendment. And what Dean Weenie says is that the language of this religious monster has been general enough that he isn't targeting a particular person, except for the fact that every time someone reads his sign, "You deserve rape," that person is being told by this misanthrope that that person deserves to be raped. Because the sign itself doesn't say, "You women deserve to be raped." It doesn't say, "You people who dress differently than how I think you should dress deserve to be raped." It says simply, "You deserve rape." And as such, were I in Dean Weenie's position, I would take the risk. I would say that this man, this thing, is actually trying to incite rape. And as such, his speech is not protected under the First Amendment, either as an expression of religion or as an expression of political speech. It is merely a call to brutality and violence. He showed up this past Tuesday because he was allegedly protesting the Take Back the Night event. Take Back the Night is a way of bringing people together to oppose so-called sexual violence. See, I say so-called because I don't think rape is ever about sex. It's about a manifestation of power or a projection of it. And since he did it with that timing, I think his intent should be inferable. There's a deep misunderstanding of the First Amendment in this country, as if it was some sort of catch-all for anything that anybody wants to say, when in fact, everyone knows the yelling fire in a crowded theater exception. And this is that. And he gets attention. And he gets mollycoddled. And it's just another day of freedom. While at the same time, the fundamentalist Christian right wing hollers that they're being oppressed. Welcome to the America that you hoped never to see. This country is in full-on retrograde motion. And honestly, I don't think it is, I don't think it's outlandish to say that, or for me to bring up my concept of the Cold Civil War. That's a manifestation of it. So too is, the pronouncement from the Nacogdoches Appleby Baptist Church in Texas, who has once again hauled out the tired, idiotic, wrong, stupid, moronic, ignorant curse of Ham language. The Nacogdoches Appleby Baptist Church has declared that there is a the curse of Ham means black people, people of dark skin, and that God cursed them and means for them to be slaves. The Southern Poverty Law Center bringing this story to light. They've got a website, the Appleby Baptist Nacogdoches Church or whatever. They say the black descendants of Ham are out to get light-skinned women's. This also is a quote from their website. The proof of the presence of God among the Israelites was the absence of the black-skinned folk of Canaan. It is obvious God is a separator, not a mixer. It is God who set the boundaries. What? God's a KitchenAid and not a Cuisinart? Huh? Since when are the people of Canaan deemed to have been of dark skin? Every last one of those tribes comes from the Nilo-Semitic or Nilo-Saharan the language group. Another quote from these people trying to drag our country backwards into the filth and muck. Satan wants to eliminate color by interracial marriages. Someone will ask, why do we have to see color when we look at one another? Why can't we just see each other as people? The same reason you see a poodle, a German shepherd, beagle, etc. God made us different and set the bounds. Like the hounds, I added that part. You don't get thoroughbreds by taking the fences down. You get thoroughbreds by putting the fences up. Oh, God. We're back to that. Arguments about, eugenics. That somehow one set of human beings is better than another because of nothing more than the melanin content of their skin. This is the kind of thing that makes you crazy. This is the kind of thing that makes you really kind of give up. The Southern Poverty Law Center writes, in case you didn't get the meta message about thoroughbreds versus mongrels, by the way, thoroughbreds, some of the sickliest horses ever to come along. Their ankles are so weak that they tend to snap like potato chips in the bottom of the bag. They have been inbred and inbred and inbred and inbred to the point that it's a miracle they're not born with banjos. But Salon writes, this appeared in Salon, the Southern Poverty Law Center writes, in case you don't get the meta message about thoroughbreds versus mongrels, the church's statement mangles a biblical passage in Matthew in which a Canaanite woman pleads with Christ on behalf of her daughter who is assumed by the Appleby Church to be black. Christ terms her people as dogs. It is not meet to take the children's bread and cast it to dogs. Unlike modern-day blacks yelling about equal rights, this woman humbles herself and says, truth, Lord, yet the dogs eat of the crumbs which fall from the master's table. Now, see, people like Goofy Louie Gohmert, Sergeant Carter, are out there hooting and hollering as to how Barack Obama done brought on the Boston bombing because he's a softy on the Muslims. Okay? And he says that, here it is. Political correctness led to the Boston bombing. Political correctness is the right-wing phrase that they use whenever they want to call somebody a nasty name and concepts of common decency prevent it. In this instance, Representative Gohmert, who, by the way, I remind you, is paid with monies that from your taxes, says, but, talking about the when the FBI went to interview Tamerlan Tsarnaev, suspect one and suspect two, sorry. But what kind of interview must that have been of the guy who was going to blow off arms and legs and kill a child and who had dreams of killing so many more? What kind of interview must that have been when you can't use the word jihad? You can't talk about his Muslim faith. Did they even bring up Tamerlan's Muslim faith in that interview? Is it any wonder that the FBI came away from their interviews and said, we don't find any problems? Well, I guess not. What kind of interviews must those have been when you can't use the terms that let you get to the bottom of what may be a plot to kill people down the road? There's no problem in the Justice Department. There's a problem with leadership that will not let them do their job, and it needs to change. You got that? Barack Obama is a secret member of the Muslim Brotherhood, and he was a covering up for them Muslims who happened to be white and one of whom happened to be an American citizen, but Louis Gohmert can't be quite brought round to tolerate and to mention that. See, he says, Gohmer does, shazam, that Muslims are just naturally out there inclined to be a killing of decent peoples. On the other hand, and I know that they can't stand to even contemplate this, but contemplate it we shall. When, and I'm just saying this is a different way of looking at things, and I think it's okay to do that. When the FBI showed up on their doorstep to ask him questions about what he thought about this and what he thought about that, that might have been, I mean, can we at least admit the vague possibility that that might have actually been the radicalizing moment? That shaking him down was the moment when he realized that because he's a Muslim, he's never going to be free of scrutiny and paranoia on the part of people like Louis Gohmert and millions of other people in this country? C- Because that kind of makes more sense to me than just saying that Muslims is naturally inclined to blow things up. When the FBI came along asking questions that were obviously directed and driven by inquiries made by the Russians, might in that moment something have clicked inside Tamerlan Tsarnaev's brain where he's thought, well, obviously they're in bed with the people who are killing my people. The enemy of my enemy is my friend, and the friend of my enemy is my enemy, right? But it's ever so much easier, isn't it? To just say, Muslim bad. Because that's what it boils down to, right? And of course, all this goes hand in hand with the Great Mulligan. You know, where the freak stands up on the floor of the Senate and says, "How many times were we attacked by the Muslims when George Bush was president?" And holds up his thumb and his index finger in the shape of a zero. Except for those 3,000 people who died on September 11th, 2001. Or then again, maybe he thinks that they were killed by the Illuminati. It really happened. So that's the mindset. That's the reality in this country that is going backwards as fast as it humanly possibly can. What I said earlier about the sequester being the biggest wet dream that the Republican Party could possibly have come up with, well, John Boozman is from Arkansas. He is, in point of fact, a Republican. And he was interviewed on some most likely right-wing program on KHTE's Alice Stewart show. He said the following: "I really think the FAA and many of the other agencies are trying to figure out how they can make things as painful as possible to the public. And it reminds me of a spoiled brat kid. You take away some of his stuff and you know he starts screaming. They don't want any cuts, period. I think you have to have some kind of a spending cap in place. You know, you can knock sequestration or not knock it, but it's worked in the sense that it has forced reduction in spending. And I've been here 11 years, and this is the first time I've seen it in this manner, and in the sense that it's something that's actually working. We all on board now?" Representative Mike Pompeo from Kansas is on board. He says, "My judgment, the pain from the sequester's not been too great." And then a couple of blocks around the corner from right here where I'm sitting, over to the Heritage Foundation, representing Raul Labrador, no, really, Bill Doberman, Raul Labrador, said, "I think it's the first time we've saved money in Washington, D.C. I think we need to move on from this subject and talk about how we can get to a balanced budget in the next 10 years and stop trying to find ways to bring the sequester up in every conversation." Woof, woof, woof. Oh, no, I added that. Bill Doberman. Except for the fact that the sequester isn't saving us money, it's costing us money. And a lot of it. And it's costing jobs. And again, to go back to the original thesis, it's costing four-year-olds the ability to go learn to read. They love it. They love it. They're on it like a dog on a bone wagon. And the question is, how do you stop them? In West Virginia, school children were forbidden from walking out on a hate fest promulgated by a group that was brought in, or a woman that was brought in, we talked about it extensively, to slut shame the young women of George Washington and Riverside High Schools. And mostly got away with it. I haven't seen the follow-up coverage as to whether or not the principal's managed to be removed from his job, but I somehow doubt it. And meanwhile, down in the middle of Mississippistan, the American Humanist Association has had to file suit against a public high school for using school time, school grounds, and school everything to proselytize for fundamentalism. It's Northwest Rankin High School in Rankin County, Mississippi. I've got the lawsuit complaint in front of me. On April 9th, 2013, the school held the first of several mandatory assemblies led by members of Pine Lake Baptist Church. These Christian assemblies were held during the school day on school grounds. Attendance was required for all students at the school of a particular grade level. The first mandatory assembly was for the senior class. The second assembly was for the juniors. The school also scheduled the same Christian video and presentation to be delivered to the freshman and sophomore classes later in the week. Those were postponed. The sophomore assembly was held a week later on April 22nd. And they showed the same right-wing fundamentalist Christian video in each. There was an email sent out from Principal Frazier at 8.04 a.m. on April the 9th. The email said, "Sorry for the late notice. All seniors will need to report to the Performing Arts Building during Cougar Connection. They should report directly from 5th Block. Thanks." Now, there was nothing in the email about what they were reporting for. But attendance was required. And so the students, probably unsuspecting, showed up at the PAB, the Performing Arts Building. And lo and behold, there were this creature from Pine Lake Baptist Church talking about how they can find hope in Jesus Christ. It all started out with the fundy saying, "Today, we are just here to talk about hope and where we have found it." And then they showed him a video of young people who had had troubled lives. In the video, one person says, hope is fixing your eyes on an eternal purpose. There's a joke about that. It ends with somebody being arrested for transporting gulls across state lions for immortal porpoises. An eternal porpoise. And then it talked about things like drugs and sex and cutting on yourself and suicide and things like that and pornography and problems in your family. And one kid said he found hope in cars and clothes, and another one said he used to find hope in pimples and other guys. And he looked at the folks for brotherly love and fatherly love, and then he had some suicidal thoughts, and he resorted to the cutting on himself. And it goes on and on and on and on, and then Jesus comes in and solves their problem. You know, just like something out of Greek drama, swings out on a crane and poof, all the problems are done. Jesus. Well, yeah, his fault. The third fundy on the video says, but now I found my hope in the one true Father who is God. He is the one that can fulfill relationships, and he is that happy ending. And the fourth one says, now I found hope in my personal Savior. Remember, none of the children who were subjected to this were able to get up and walk out. And it's not that they were too afraid to try. They tried. And they were refused. Paragraph 40 of the complaint. The church representative encouraged those who did not believe in Jesus Christ to just be open. And he then explained, some of you may not know who Jesus is and say, who is this Jesus? Jesus was God's son, and he came to earth over 2,000 years ago, and for 33 years he walked the earth. He lived a perfect life. Never pooped, never peed, never stubbed his toe, never, and you know, there he is, a day laborer, never whacked his thumb with a hammer and hollered out, me! He lived a perfect life. See, we all, in our past, we all have messed up, we've all failed, and it's because of this that our relationship with God is, there's a gap between us and God because God is perfect and human is not. And then Jesus came knowing the end was in mind, and his ultimate purpose to come to earth was to die, not a normal death, but a death for each and every one of you and death for me. You know, I still get notes from time to time from people who don't understand when I say that Christianity is a death cult. That there. And this goes on and on and on because, well, apparently they transcribed it. And it details the junior assembly and the sophomore assembly. Anybody with their right mind would know that this is not legal. But again, these are fundamentalists in Mississippi Stan, and using fundamentalist and Mississippi Stan and right mind are probably contradictions in terms. Fritz in Arkansas noting Bozeman on the radio. Looks like Bozeman. I kind of like Bozeman better. Fritz says, I didn't listen that day as I avoid that right-wing FM talk radio station. There are two such right-wing stations in Little Rock, both on FM. But you mentioned the show. It's a 6 to 8 a.m. show hosted by a former Little Rock TV news anchor turned one-time campaign staffer for, oh, no. Methinks she doth protesteth too much. Michelle Bachman. Ms. Stewart's show is followed by Glenn Beck and then Mike Huckabee. Lord. It's the knife grinding hour with Alice Stewart. Get your Arkansas stone out and get them all nice and sharp. The Fritz says, I heard you reference that racist church down in East Texas, so I Googled for more info. Oh, Fritz, don't do that. They have a website, bit of a shocker. I expected them to be somewhat anti-internet, but several articles were on the website, among them Teenage Drinking and Premarital Sex, The Perfect Picture Show or The Perverted Picture Show, Interracial Marriages in Light of the Scriptures, Easter, Baskets, Bunnies, and Big Ol' Eggs, Tulip Sniffing, what? Tulip Sniffing, John Calvin Worshippers, and the Sovereign Grace Movement. Jesus, John Calvin is too liberal for these people? Wait, stop it. Beth Moore and Religious Whores, Fake Promise Giving and Foolish Living, the Cowboy Church Movement, Lariat Ropes, Loudmouth Women, and Loose Living. Half of these things sound like George Jones songs. Temples, Tattoos, and Tarnished Men. And I'm sorry, I'm going to open this tab, and I'm not going to read it just yet. Because they put... Baptist Preachers and N-Word Jokes. By Dennis Anderson. June 27th, 2010. Maybe they can book this guy over at the Northwest Rankin High School in the Performing Arts Barn or whatever it is first. I'm not kidding. This is not from that old Betty Bowers website, okay? This is for real. Brother Dennis Anderson writes on June the 27th, 2010, first, let me be clear. I would witness to a Negro as quickly as I would any other race. I'm sorry for using a term they themselves use in this article. However, I am not going to avoid the scriptures in order to have a Negro in our congregation as many of the brethren do. If a black couple or family wants to come to our church, they need not expect me to avoid what God says about the Hamite. If an interracial couple, Hamite and Gentile, or Hamite and Jew, etc., wants to come to our assembly, they will need to know I will not be silent about their unscriptural union just to keep them. It has nothing to do with being prejudiced. It is a matter of the Bible. This goes on. Let's see. A black woman needs the Lord as much as a white woman does, but a black woman does not need a white husband. A black man needs the Lord as much as a white man does, but a black man does not need a white wife. I don't reckon Slappy Thomas is going to be popping into the pews down there at Appleby Baptist Church anytime soon. Get the picture? I'm against interracial marriages because the Bible is. See article on website, Interracial Marriages in Light of the Scriptures. No, let's don't and say we didn't. I'm glad I'm only footsteps away from the shower because I'm going to jump in it the instant this program is over. Lord God, Billy Bob. But see, this is not done gratuitously. This is the reality of America running backwards as fast as it possibly can. It's been more than 50 years since the Supreme Court declared that the public schools could not be used as platforms for proselytizing for any particular religious faith. 50 years, and the message has still not filtered all the way down to Rankin County, Mississippi, Stan. Or actually, it has filtered down, and it has been rejected. This is another instance of, come on, nullification. That people in the state and the subdivisions of the states will damned well do as they damned well please, and until the Supreme Court of the United States has a few divisions to back up its pronouncements, that they can just mind their own business. We are talking about, at this point in time, a significant segment of the population of the United States wholesale rejecting the very principles upon which this country is said to be founded and perpetuated. And it really is that simple. And it really is that shocking. And it really is that terrifying. And we've got about another hour of the program left. A break coming. Oh, dadgummit, I just saw a little piece of news roll across here. The angry Indian told me. It's not just George Jones we lost today. Chrissy Amphlett is dead at 53 years old. I suppose maybe the Baptist down there at Appleby would say that was God's judgment for her immoral ways. Yeah. You know the song. The divinals, I touch myself. She'd been sick for a long time. I recall John Fox telling me once, but she's gone now at 53. Our sympathies for what they're worth. I mean, it's not like they're listening to the program or anything, but it's still sad to hear. So, I'm just going to take a break and then come back to your, if you wish, your calls on Skype. Bob Kincaid Horn is the contact account. Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. Thanks very much, Kate, for getting us started on fundraising this evening. We've got 90 bucks to go to make this evening's fundraising goal, and it would be nice to make that considering how far behind we are. I'm not going to play anything or anything like that. I'm just going to stop the stream momentarily and pick it back up. This is Conversation Radio. Live from the headquarters of the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Campaign in Washington, D.C. on Capitol Hill. I'm Bob Kincaid. Well, the hour three intro's got the 800 number on it anyway, so we'll just do without that. Welcome back. Where'd you go? I had to get a glass of water. Gets to be kind of dry business. And bless her heart, I often say, you know, someday I'll have a staff or something. But the fact of the matter is, Agnes keeps me in water and things like that to keep me from sounding like Alex Jones. But this is the horn. It's Friday on the front porch. The Skype line is open if you want to jump in and got something you want to bring to the table. That would be just fine. Thanks very much, by the way, in the interim. Thanks to Kath for getting us a little closer to tonight's fundraising goal. We are now only $70 away from getting where we need to be, at least for this evening. Interesting, in the wake of the news of the lead singer for the Divinyls passing on. Like I said, she'd been sick for a while. Angry Indian bringing that to my attention. Chrissy Amphlett. Robert writes from Australia. He says, there are discussions going on to use I Touch Myself for breast cancer awareness. I think that would be just lovely. Kate, I think everything's okay. She said, something bumped the stream back to my email first hour. Too spooky. Odd. But no, I think it was just bouncing back to what had gone before. Yeah, magic of the internet. Kate noting, odd that the house next door, the one I mentioned that George Jones was in, remained a party house after all those years. The woman and her little kids just couldn't seem to keep the rowdies away. Kate knows a little bit about that house. She helped me hang on to it, helped us hang on to it for a little while after my father passed away. Note to Ferg from Kate. Please, please listen to experience. Stop walking on your ankle. You are exacerbating the injury. This makes the recovery time much longer and weakens your ankle. You will pay for this as the years go by. Let someone else carry the equipment. Don't make all the jaunts around D.C. next week, or take some of the $60 that I just donated to buy some crutches from a drugstore. I bought him an ankle brace for $30 earlier. Or find a secondhand store and buy some cheap ones. Just get off the ankle. Listen to experience. Nag, 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 I know. Yeah, but sometimes experience has to speak up.
Let me reiterate, I was dancing on it earlier.
Yeah, because you're not very bright sometimes.
I'm not bright at all.
Jeez. So, let's see, where did we leave off? Oh, yeah. The weirdos in Texas. And the weirdos in Arizona. And the weirdos in Washington, D.C., and weirdos everywhere. Speaking of which, and it's not like this is prayer meeting Wednesday or anything, but you can't just let this go by. This is the story of Ramon Gustavo Castillo Gaete. That name's a bit of a mouthful, so necessarily he refers to himself as Antares from the Light. This story comes out of Chile. He's on the run from authorities in Chile. You know, it's not just the U.S. that has this problem. He's on the run from authorities in Chile because he and his followers ritually murdered a baby girl. Oh, Jesus. The baby was naked. They strapped tape around her mouth to keep her from screaming. Then they placed her on a board, and after calling on the spirits, they threw her on the bonfire alive. Religion. Religion. The glory and mysticism of religion. And don't forget the loving grace thereof as well. In Switzerland, apparently, when you get really, really, really sick and you're in misery, you can avail yourself of physician-assisted self-termination. A woman named Susan Griffiths, 72-year-old Canadian, left Canada and went to Switzerland to die. She did this after she was diagnosed with multiple system atrophy, and that's a lot of, that's a complicated process that means you lose all ability to control your bodily functions and are left agonizing in severe pain. She died this past Thursday. She left a statement before she left for Switzerland. I have to go to Switzerland because there's no such service in Canada for Canadians who are drastically ill and want not to live anymore. But it's what I want to, because I do not want to live in the conditions that I have now. And she begged the Canadian Parliament to legalize assisted suicide. And lo and behold, after the story was published, a Christian, oh, Jesus, save me from your followers. What did Gandhi say? I like your Christ. I do not like your Christians. They are so unlike your Christ. The woman who wrote the story, or the person who wrote the story, Lindor Reynolds of the Winnipeg Free Press, said, the day after my story about Susan ran, I got a phone call from a distressed man. He wanted me to give him Susan's phone number. He was a Christian, he said, and he needed to tell her she'd go to hell if she went ahead with her plans. You know, because it's a death cult. Because Jesus wants his followers, whom he loves, to suffer just like he did. Do you see the essential disconnect with anything resembling compassion or love in this religion of love and compassion? I need to call the woman who has an agonizing, debilitating disease to tell her if she decides not to tolerate the agonizing, debilitating disease anymore, that Jesus, who loves her with all his being, loves her so much that he will torment her for all eternity. Chile, Canada, the United States, it's everywhere. It is our manifest, it is our most manifest human sickness, religion. I need her phone number. I need to be able to tell her that she'll go to hell if she doesn't suffer. You know, suffer for Jesus. But again, it's pervasive. It is all over us, whether it's individuals who are religiously motivated or whether it's drug companies motivated by profit. on the one hand, it almost seems that Switzerland is downright civilized when it comes to things like people being able to make their own decisions about life and death, especially in the face of unbearable illness. But, of course, there are also corporations in Switzerland. Corporations like Novartis. The Justice Department, apparently in a legal action, the U.S. Justice Department, you know, the one that Louis Gohmert says is too afraid to say the scary I word, Islam, and ain't allowed to say the jihad word. Well, the Justice Department has accused Novartis of Switzerland of paying kickbacks to physicians to prescribe their drugs instead of the drugs of other companies. Well, that's just the free market. Right? Sure. Novartis's drugs are terribly, terribly, terribly expensive. And it increased its market share by providing so-called incentives for doctors who prescribed it instead of prescribing less expensive drugs by other manufacturers. But that's not, there's nothing wrong with that, right? Again, that's just a free market. God. And while I've been up here this week, it's been one thing after another. And it's been really frustrating not to be able to get on the air with these things because, you know, it's not necessarily like I'm telling you anything you don't know or perhaps haven't read. But honest to Pete, it's just kind of cleansing to not have to contemplate this stuff by yourself or by myself. You remember it was out of Texas, wasn't it? The story of the young woman who had been raped. And the school board ruled and the court ruled that she had to cheer for her rapist in games. Well, it ain't always Texas. Story out of RH Reality Check from Michigan. A young woman at a high school there was sexually assaulted by one of the star basketball players at her school. There are, as RH Reality Check notes, similarities to the Steubenville, Ohio case. In 2010, the story says, the victim was sexually assaulted by a star player on the school's basketball team. The assault took place on campus in a soundproof band room at Forest Hills Central High School. The victim notified a teacher. The teacher reported the assault to the principal. That's where it ended. Because the principal then went to the student and her parents and said, you don't want to file charges. If you do, why, the guy who raped you won't be recruited to play Division I basketball. Do 2 weeks later, it is alleged, he raped another girl. And no one at the high school ever interviewed the girl or her parents again, didn't investigate, and continued to let the rapist remain in at least one of the young woman's classes. Then word of the rape got out, and the young woman was bullied both cybernetically and physically, called a liar, called a whore, and the school still did nothing. She was shoved, she was pushed, she was slammed into lockers. And finally, 5 weeks after the rape, the prosecutor's office of Kent County, Michigan, authorized 2 felony counts of criminal sexual conduct against the star basketball player. Then the prosecutor turned around and let the rapist plead out to a single count of misdemeanor assault and battery, not even a sexual or sexually oriented crime, just assault and battery. He was briefly benched from playing basketball. The school, of course, was very concerned about the young man's basketball future, but not so much about the cheerleading future or the soccer future of the victim. She quit both. Her grades fell. She was isolated and shunned in her class. She went so far as to transfer to a new school. And she gets to live with this for the rest of her life. And the young man says, "Oh, man, I had to go to youthful sexual offender counseling. What a bunch of..." Is this the part where we sing? "And I'm proud to be an American." Yeah. Yeah, I got a million of them. But, this... I don't want to miss this one. We were talking earlier about the way that, well, the, you know, throwing tiny little 4-year-old low incomes out of class and Head Start and stuff. Well, just be glad you don't live in Norristown, Pennsylvania. Isaac sent this along. In Norristown, Pennsylvania, if you are a victim of domestic violence and you keep on being a victim of domestic violence and you call the police too many times because you're being subjected to domestic violence, you get booted out of your home. Not the abuser, not the attacker, you, the victim. There is actually a municipal ordinance on the books in Norristown, Pennsylvania, that tells landlords to evict tenants who call for police assistance, even in cases of domestic assault. It's not just domestic assault, it's even in cases of domestic assault. Burglary, robbery, mayhem, malicious wounding, kidnapping, arson, rape. Yeah. There's the story of Lakeisha Briggs. She had made 3 domestic violence calls. And after the third one, on May the 23rd, 2012, police officers told her, "You are on 3 strikes. We're going to have your landlord evict you." Jesus. And it's all part of a disorderly behavior ordinance. On the third call, the abuser chased the woman, Ms. Briggs, Lakeisha Briggs, down the alley with a brick and followed her to her house where he attacked her. At which point, they tried to have her evicted. A judge stepped in and refused to participate in the eviction. And Norristown tried again. They came back after the ordinance got struck down, passed another one. This one says it's disorderly behavior when a landlord it fines landlords and evicts tenants if someone requests police assistance at a property 3 times or more in 4 months. But you know, oddly enough, it's only applied to people who are renting. There's nothing in there about people living in gated communities. The 99%, oh yeah, they can get booted. The 1%, well, you know, Muffy and I never called the police. Apparently, though, this isn't just something that happens in Norristown, PA. There are nuisance ordinance and crime-free ordinances on the books in Milwaukee. Properties, according to the study that was published, properties in black neighborhoods disproportionately receive citations, and those located in more integrated black neighborhoods have the highest likelihood of being deemed nuisances. In America, in the United States, really and for true. Does it make you want to just try to figure out a way to pack up and leave? Oh, by the way, back to Michigan again. Buena Vista, of course, there's one in Virginia, and it's Buena Vista. Buena Vista, Michigan. It's a township there. They have a board of trustees. This past April 22nd, it got nasty. There's a supervisor of the board of trustees, and there's also a clerk of the board of trustees. The township supervisor is Dwayne Parker. The township clerk is Gloria Platko. The recording comes from January. This is the recording. I'm queuing it up. Oh, naturally. It's not going to play. One of these nights we're going to figure out all the little technical demons that inhabit this box. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't. Okay. So apparently Ms. Platko doesn't like Mr. Parker. Again, America, 21st century, the quote. He's just rubbing me the wrong way. He's just doing whatever he can. You know what I think of Mr. Parker right now, and I know you're not even going to like this, but he's just an arrogant N-word. And I'm sorry to say it that way, but that's the way I feel. You know what? If you say it that way, here's a pro tip. Little hint. You're not sorry. And all of this was released this past Monday. Gloria Platko says that members of the Board of Trustees of the Township are making the issue bigger than it should be. They're trying to make it sound like a racial thing. It's not a race thing. Isn't it charming how white folks who want to use racially derogatory terms get to define the parameters of what is racist conduct and what is not? I mean, that's just what I called him. It's not a racial thing. Political correctness is ruining this country. You can almost hear the right wing now. Political correctness. Hoo-wee. And, you know, it would be improper to sit here and say that the whole country is this way because of the actions of a few. And I acknowledge that. But the few seem to be getting morer. Protestist. And you never know when you're going to run across one of these Jesus land freaks. And it crosses religion and cultural and just about every boundary you can imagine. On the way out of one of the congressional office buildings yesterday, we noticed that one of the committee room doors was open and folks were filing in. And I was wondering, what in God's name would they be having a hearing about in there? Well, it turns out that the hearing was about those boondoggle electric cars. In this case, in particular, Fisker Automotive. It was called by Representative Daryl Issa, you know, the unindicted co-conspirator. Yeah, look it up. And the right wing wanted to have a sure enough hissy about those evil, useless electric cars, right? Yeah, Daryl Issa.
I'm currently from California, Mr. Fisker. Welcome. But I was born and raised in Ohio. I grew up in a car company family. I worked for General Motors. My father worked for General Motors. Everyone else worked for TRW. One way or the other, everybody in our family was in the car business. So I'm going to open up by telling you, you know that your place in history as a body designer is secure. You know the work you've done in other areas is well known and desirable. Yes, you're going to be with Preston Tucker for building an innovative car that didn't last from a fiscal responsibility. The company didn't make it. You'll be with Malcolm Bricklin. You'll be with John DeLorean. That's not necessarily bad company. Quite frankly, innovative cars have a history of failing.
This is delightful coming from a guy who is literally an unindicted co-conspirator in a bunco scam.
This program was conceived, as the ranking member said, under President Bush, voted, it's not a partisan vote, it's not a partisan program. We have you here today not because you failed, not because you lost potentially federal, U.S. dollars and other investors' dollars. We have you here today because we need to figure out not...
Because you're not one of our Goldman Sachs buddies. Because you're not one of those folks from over there to J.P. Morgan Chase. Because you were actually trying to do some American innovating and stuff. And, well, being Republicans, we don't believe in that crap no more.
The successes of a program, we appreciate that. And I think they should be lauded. And the administration's done a pretty good job of doing it. We have you here because there were a number of things that happened along the way in which DOE had an opportunity to not give you some of the money that they're now trying to recover. They had an opportunity in several documents to get the money back and allow you to be spun off to...
You know, could Mr. Fisker just, like, go and sit somewhere and have a cocktail? I didn't know they were allowed to filibuster in the House of Representatives. You know, hey, Daryl, listen, I'm going to go have a margarita across the street at the Tortilla Coast. When you're done, I'll come up and tell and talk with you a little bit. But really, I don't need a lecture.
Somebody else, at least the record indicates that. There were opportunities to not fail. More importantly, this was an investment in a finished car from Finland. That was not something that was envisioned when this was produced.
And he would know that how? But here's the fun part. It's always a beautiful thing to watch a Repiglican hang himself on his own petard. And Daryl Issa did. And I'm not even talking about the unindicted co-conspirator thing. No. It turns out that Daryl Issa himself, really and for true, no kidding, specifically asked, made a request for, pursued a loan for, a three-wheeled electric car that was described, and there are quotation marks around the words, as sperm-shaped. A sperm-mobile. Just like something out of maybe a Woody Allen movie. What was that Woody Allen movie? I can't remember it. But yeah. Sleeper, that's what it was. This was Solyndra Part 2. These people, these right-wingers are so sickeningly transparent, you can tell that they despise anything that does not... Honest to God, if Daryl Issa could figure out a way, I bet he would eat 10W30 on his cornflakes. if they could just be made not poisonous. What an idiot. Nah, they're past idiots. They're too dangerous just simply to be written off as idiots. True, Waggy, true. Sperm are aerodynamic for obvious reasons. Well, would they necessarily be aerodynamic or would they be hydrodynamic? I mean, it's not like they're flying through air there. But my God. You know, you have to fund some interesting technological stuff if you want interesting technological stuff to come to fruition. And it wasn't a bad deal. And frankly, the way the right wing talks about the idea of electric cars, you know, at the same time Fisker was getting money, so was Nissan USA for the Leaf. And the Leaf, I hear, is doing quite nicely, thank you very much. But can't have none of them electric cars. Maybe they. You think they'd feel differently about them if coal generated electricity was above 40%. Nah, I don't know. Fiscal conservatives. Kind of like what I said about the Christians. Save us from them too, because they'll run you bankrupt. This coming in from Jack in Shreveport. My local paper's front page story, take a guess. Bob, so what do you know? My local paper's front page story is about prayer in government meetings. Two large photos show heads bowed. I think the number of column inches devoted to the story rival any other story I've seen. There's the usual religious babble by some of the people quoted, but there are some useful facts and legal references as well. It's really hard to deal with all the dumbassery that's happening these days, and I agree. The stupid. It hurts. So I guess it's pretty much time to get out of here. I can't tell, what plays and what doesn't play. So, you know, no outro music this evening. Just my kind thanks for your patience and forbearance during this week of A, very, very busy meeting-filled days, and B, nights when the magic just didn't work. So thank you very much. Thank you for your kind consideration and continuing to help us keep all the plates spinning in the air. Be home next week. Looking forward to getting back into the normal, although albeit somewhat broken down studio. We'll have this stuff working again in no time. Have a wonderful weekend, everyone, and hopefully we will talk soon. Thanks to everybody who makes all this go. You, first and foremost, with your kind contributions, as well as the contributions also kindly offered of your ideas, your thoughts, your hopes, your ambitions, your outrage, everything. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room, our news ninjas Gene and Susan, John Fox in Australia, who helps keep all the molecules behaving properly and the equipment behaving as best as can be expected, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Ben has never sent a bill, and yet for over 10 years now, he has made sure that progressive radio continues to be available despite the best efforts of the right wing to destroy it. And thanks, of course, always go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and AICACT.org. Go to ACAC.org, see the briefing that was put on Tuesday, read about how everything that's involved with it, learn the science, read the bill, and then just like our buddy Gary did today, get in contact with your member of Congress and let them know that you insist that the AIC Act, that they co-sponsor the AIC Act, and that the AIC Act be given hearings and then passed. And of course, always, 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 Gina and Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next. And we'll talk soon. Bye now.